This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 263 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the FanDuel Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. People who play and analyze fantasy football, they seem to dismiss a lot of things this time of year, and really just in general, because they don't seem relevant enough. Like what goes on in training camp. I agree that a lot of what we read and see is absolute garbage this time of year. A lot of it is completely subjective. But there are still some takeaways that you can grab and maybe help you understand how a team views a player a little bit more. How you personally evaluate talent, not only can that just be wrong, but it also has to align with how teams think. Because in the end, teams are choosing which players find the field and in turn, which players will be fantasy relevant. Talent is part of the equation, but let's not pretend like we have all the answers sitting at home on our couches. We don't. So we need to utilize as much information as we possibly can. The same goes for schedule analysis. We look back on an NFL season every year and we say, man, who could have predicted this? But it's not so unpredictable that you can't correctly foresee anything happening. Like, I think it's kind of hypocritical for someone to project what's going to happen with individual players in fantasy football, but then say that we can't project what a schedule looks like. That seems like backwards logic. And not only that, but a lot of the, man, who could have predicted this stuff, usually ignores the things that we actually predicted correctly. There are still things that are pretty easily predictable in the NFL, especially when you look at the stable pieces like quarterback play. And then most of all, with all of this, it's important to remember that no one is living and dying by this type of analysis. You shouldn't be fading a certain player completely because the schedule just looks brutal. You should use it more as a tiebreaker or just another small reason to downgrade or upgrade a player. So with all this in mind, on today's podcast, I'm going to be looking at seven players, and really, I'll talk about more than just seven. But I'm going to look at players who seem to have easy and hard schedules to open up the fantasy football season. The reason I like looking at early season schedules is because teams aren't as banged up early in the season. So we understand the personnel a lot better than we will in like week 13. But also we want to have confidence in our players to start the year. You want your guys to get off to a hot start. That way you can have more leverage in trade talks and you won't see your players dip in value to start the year. That gives you more confidence with those players. And then, of course, if you're streaming the quarterback position, let's say, you obviously want cake matchups at the beginning of the season. You want to start with big performances from your quarterbacks. Now, before looking at some of those players, I wanted to let you guys know that it's the final week of FanDuel's MLB Single Entry Series presented by RotoGrinders. That means it's your last chance to earn your spot to the championship. Your top four scores will count for the week, and the highest total score for the week earns a spot to the championship for a chance at the $10,000 first place prize. For more info, visit FanDuel.com or download the FanDuel app. Eligibility restrictions apply. Okay, so to start today's show, I'll look at the favorable side. We'll leave the negativity for the end. The first player who's got a favorable early season schedule is one that quarterback streamers should be eyeing, and that's Dak Prescott. People seem to be turned off by matchups for quarterbacks that almost look too easy on paper. But a rule of thumb is that positive game scripts are just generally good for quarterbacks. You can think of it this way. To get into a positive game script in the first place, something good has to happen for an offense. And if something good is happening for an offense, it's usually because the quarterback is performing well. Dallas starts out the season against New York, and that's the Giants, so they get New York, then Washington, and then Miami. According to FanDuel Sportsbook, those three teams are three of the worst in the NFL from an over-under win standpoint. And Pro Football Focus ranked those three teams' secondaries in the bottom half of the league. So with Ezekiel Elliott, if he's active, he's going to eat in those games. I'm not denying that. But Dak Prescott should too. He at least should provide a very nice floor. Now, if you can't get Dak, you could always look at Jimmy Garoppolo as another week one streamer. He'll be in Tampa Bay. He's facing arguably the league's worst secondary in a game that currently has a 49-point over-under with just a one-point spread. That's according to FanDuel Sportsbook. So there's shootout potential and a plus matchup for Jimmy G in week one. So if you're going into your draft strictly wanting to stream the quarterback position, he's not a bad choice. But I do want to reiterate that I'm still looking to draft Lamar Jackson this year. And it's not just because of what I've been saying throughout the offseason about his upside, but because the Ravens have a really nice early season schedule as well. And that early season schedule should help Mark Ingram too. I'm pretty much middle of the road with Ingram when it comes to his ADP and where I have him ranked, but I do love the potential for him at the start of the season. Because Baltimore will face the Dolphins in week one and then the Cardinals in week two. Those are two teams who combined for 9.5 wins this year, win total wise, over on FanDuel Sportsbook. If there are positive game scripts, the Ravens are going to be even more run-heavy than they'd typically be. And remember, last season when Lamar Jackson took over, the Ravens were third in running back attempts. And during that time, they ran the fifth fewest plays while trailing. So we could see a similar situation as last year, which is good news for Ingram, because he's likely to see the most work on the ground this season in that backfield. And the last player with a strong early season schedule who I want to highlight is Chris Godwin. I love Chris Godwin this year for obvious reasons. There's no more DeSean Jackson. Bruce Arians is a coach who likes to run his offense with a vertical passing attack, and that really matches up well with Jameis Winston. And Chris Godwin, unlike last year, is going to be on the field all the time. He played three quarters or more of Tampa Bay's snaps last year just five times. It was weeks 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17. In those games, he saw over 19% of the team's targets, and he had two 100-plus yard games. And while you may make the argument that one of those big games happened in week 17, another one also came against Baltimore. And not a whole lot of wide receivers found success against the Ravens last year. In that game, the Bucs only threw for 157 yards. Godwin's now another year in the league, and he has his opportunity. And in week one, he gets that matchup that I just talked about against San Francisco. And then in week two and week three, he'll get the Panthers and the Giants. Now, Carolina has a nasty front, and that might help their secondary, but the secondary itself has a ton of question marks. So both of those matchups are arguably plus matchups as well. It's just another reason to like Chris Godwin this year. Okay, so let's look at the other side of things, the negative stuff, the players with bad schedules to open up the year. I'm going to start with Aaron Rodgers. Now, in single quarterback leagues, you shouldn't be getting Rodgers anyway, given his cost. But the Packers open things up against Chicago and then Minnesota this year. Now, I like Aaron Rodgers to rebound over last year where he had a 4.2% touchdown rate. His career average is a 6.2% touchdown rate. I think he'll be a better fantasy asset. But with that type of start against those opponents, he'll be more of a buy low candidate heading into week three. But I also wouldn't advise you buy a quarterback, so unless you're in a super flex or a two quarterback league, I'd be staying away from Aaron Rodgers. If you really want to get him, I would buy into him in week three. I'm also slightly nervous about Devontae Freeman. Now, I love Freeman as one of those third-round backs who has the potential to return first-round value this year. Genuinely. That offensive line has a lot of potential to be great, and Atlanta should be a lot better this year now that they're healthier. And Freeman doesn't have Tevin Coleman there anymore. The other backs like Ito Smith will dig into his workload, but those replacements aren't as scary competition-wise as Tevin Coleman. So I still like Freeman this year. I just have to recognize that the Falcons open up the year against Minnesota and Philadelphia. Those are two really tough matchups for the run game, especially with their week one game being in Minnesota. I think the hope would be that Freeman plays a big role in the receiving game, so if it's a PPR format of some sort, you'll probably be okay. And it's not like you're benching Devontae Freeman anyway. But I could see him being a buy low candidate after week two, especially if the volume is there and people are just turned off by the lack of efficiency. So still draft Freeman as you usually would, but just recognize that those first 2 weeks could be kind of tough. And lastly, there's the Washington running backs. Washington probably has the least appetizing offense in the entire league for fantasy purposes. I guess you could put Miami there as well, but it's not looking very good. As much as I like Darius Geis as a player, I still see him as more of a 2020 guy. Someone who might have his breakout year next season and not this season. Not just because the offense has a chance to be a lot better next year, but he's still competing with Chris Thompson and Adrian Peterson this year. And he's coming off an injury. Things should just be easier for him in 2020. I will say, though, his ADP isn't as high as I thought it would be. So he's still not that awful of a draft pick. I'm just not super high on him for 2019. And of course, I'm also worried at the kind of start that he'll have this year. Remember, we want positive game scripts for our running backs. Really, for our offensive players. And Washington will face Philly in week one, Dallas in week two, and Chicago in week three. That's brutal. You've got to hope that Geis is the primary pass catcher, but we don't know how involved he'll be as a receiver this year. And if things get out of hand against those teams, teams who all are projected to be playoff contenders with solid defenses, then Geis could be in trouble. And the same definitely goes for Adrian Peterson, who struggled as a fantasy asset last year when Washington lost. He averaged over 21 carries per game in wins last year, and in losses, that number fell to 11. And he only had 26 targets across the entire season, so you know that he won't be heavily involved as a receiver. So I'll likely not be drafting Geis or Adrian Peterson this year. But I might look into buying Darius Geis once week four hits, depending on their situation. I just think that's the right process. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to all of you for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And wherever you listen to the show, please do me a favor and leave a rating and review. You can also follow me on Twitter at LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. I know it was a quick show today, but I'll be back in your ears later this week with a mailbag episode.